I'm not going to say anything, Don. I went for a hike and I didn't have a sore back. The youth group gave me food for a whole week. We're in a series I've titled The Jesus Lifestyle, and so today what I want to do with you is talk about learning to live with Jesus, learning to live with Jesus. Because we need to learn, right? He's invited us to live with him. So his ways, his patterns, his outlook on life with all our hearts, his prayer whispers, his kind nudges that he gives us from time to time, his gentle rebuke, learning to listen to that, and when we have to change directions in life, he will give those. Sometimes we have to unlearn before we learn. And so learning to Jesus is less about his diet and his dress code, his music tastes and things like that. Though we do think that he probably had a beard and there was no such thing as No Shave November, right? So when you study the Gospels, what you see is a life that he lived that we can understand. Jesus was a small town person, small town man. Nazareth was a place of about 200 to 400 people. But just 4 miles down the road, which back then was a little bit longer because of transportation, but it was Sepphoris, a city of 30,000. So he was a small town man. Let's hear it for Perry County, right? Yeah! Small town man that he was. So he wasn't an urbanite. He wasn't a suburbanite. But there was sarcasm that came with where he lived. Remember Nathanael, his own disciple, said, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" So he lived like we did with all those kinds of things and attitudes. Jesus had a personality. When you look at the children, they're drawn to sunny personalities. They just want to be in the basket of that. They're not drawn to sullen personalities. So he had something about him. I think he was playful. He gave his disciples nicknames, Sons of Thunder. You know, maybe it wasn't a chuckle, but it was, he had nicknames. And so he lived that way. Jesus lived a very public, busy life once ministry started. Remember, someone came up and said, "I want to follow you." And he said, "Well, the Son of Man has no place to rest his head." And so in some ways, Jesus lived this Airbnb lifestyle, right? There was no homestead. And so it was a very, very moving life. We know he was a craftsman, right? He was a carpenter. He understood what it meant to work. Deadlines and taxes and customer service and sweat on the brow and soreness in the hip. Maybe. But when he hit his finger with a hammer, there were no words that came after. Jesus' lifestyle. If we learn to live with him, we will become like him, and then we can do like him. New York Times had a bestseller book called Finding Gobi. It's an amazing story. It's it was a New York Times bestseller. Dion Leonard is an ultramarathoner. And ultramarathoners, in my opinion, they're insane athletes. They run for 155 miles over several days, and they go into the most insane conditions, Sahara, Moroccan deserts, to the Gobi Mountains of China. They will race and have these races. Well, this one particular race, Dion was an Australian. He's the author of this book. His heart rate was about to take a different beat. He was in Gobi, China. And over the years, he's seen animals, but this particular day, there was a small dog that he set eyes on, and the dog set eyes on him. Within minutes, the dog came down by his feet, and he looked down at this little dog and said, "Man, you are cute." And the relationship started. What happened was, as he was asking, "Whose dog is this?" because the dog followed him, and he thought, "Well, if I start running, I don't want to trip over you." The dog did follow him. He didn't find the owner, and the dog followed him the rest of the race. Everywhere he went, that dog went. And he said, "When I crossed the river," because this is ultramarathoners, right? He would carry Gobi a certain way. And he said here, "From that moment on, whenever I carried her in this position through the river crossing, Gobi loved being held in my arms." I love this story. Are we called to be like Gobi? Where you go, I go. Where you stay, I stay. Whatever you say, I'll do. Whatever you do, I'll do. This is what Gobi did. And it's such a beautiful picture for me of what the Jesus lifestyle is. It's a picture. Maybe the book should be Gobi Found Me. You know, just a thought. So I want to examine what it means to live with Jesus according to what Jesus says living with him is like. First, we'll look at six benefits of living Jesus' way in the gospel I'm going to share with you in John. Then I just want to look at just one pitfall of not living with him. And then finally, how do we best do that in our own postmodern times? Because to live with Jesus is to spend every waking moment attuned to his heart and his words. To live with Jesus is to be staunchly attentive to his movement, to his life. To live with Jesus is actually to live 24 hours, and if the Lord should wake me, I am ready to listen. David said in the Psalms, even at night you instruct me. So have a piece of paper and a notebook on your nightstand. That's what it means to live with Jesus. Be ready for instructions, right? So let's take a look at a passage here, a very important passage on living with Jesus. John chapter, or the Gospel of John chapter 15. We're going to read verses 1 to 17. And the context here you're going to get, very important to understand the context, but let's read John 15, verses 1 to 17. Very familiar verse if you've been reading the word for a long time. Jesus said here, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You're already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. That's a pretty strong statement, by the way. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As a father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's command and remain in his love. I've told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants. What an elevation, like what a statement. I call you friends. I call you friends. Everything that I've learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command, love each other. What we have to see in this discussion Jesus has here is that Jesus is actually, what John does here is take a conversation over five chapters. It starts in John 13, goes to John 17. So think about that. A quarter of the book of the Gospel of John is on this one conversation. And how does Jesus start the conversation? I'm about to go, and you can't go with me. That, after 3 years being together, must have hit them. Can you imagine if your spouse comes up to you and says, I'm about to move on, and you can't go with me? You know, that would hit you hard. It hit them like a Mack truck. That's the context. At one point, Jesus says to them, he says this, my children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me where I'm going. You cannot come. Peter speaks up, Lord, wherever you go, I'm going. So that's the context of what we're heading into. And so they've had this 3-year run It's about to come to the end. So Jesus is basically saying, I'm not going to be with you physically, but this is how you can live with me spiritually. This is how you can live now. And this is where we come. And so Jesus uses the word remain 10 times in this. In the original, it's the word meno. It can be translated abide, stay, dwell, or make your home in. You could take this verse and say, make your home in me as I make my home in you. Brings to light what he was doing. Come live with me. Boys, heaven is not so much about where we're going. Heaven is about here and now. Here and now. So Jesus is giving them living arrangements. 10 times he uses this word, meno. All of us abide in something every day. Whether it's music, we go to something to emotionally refuel ourselves. We do it every day. The Daniel fast, I can't go to the things that I used to refuel by. Raisinets is my downfall. I love raisinets. But Jesus is offering a lifestyle, a meno culture. And this, I want to look at the 6 benefits because if you build a meno culture in your home, then it's eating breakfast with Jesus. Not just breakfast, then Jesus. Then it's getting the kids ready for school with Jesus, even when they're fighting you not to go, right? It's breakfast, or it's sleepless nights. Do it with Jesus. Talk to him about it. It's nudging your husband when he keeps hitting that snooze button, but do it in Jesus' name, not just kind of, honey. Living with Jesus is changing diapers with Jesus. A.W. Tozer called this passage habitual, constant, conscious communion. Brother Lawrence said, practicing the presence of Christ. So what are the benefits? Just briefly, first one here. He removes the useless things. This is spring cleaning with Jesus, right? The word remain, again, constant and continual communion. So here he says, he will cut off every branch in us that does not bear fruit. Jesus is giving us a clue that when we live with him, he's going to bring up things. We need to cut this out. And so he's saying, I will wear scissors in your house for your good. But sometimes, is it not true, he needs a chainsaw to get through to us? Right? Because it's so embedded in us. He will cut these things off. He does this out of love. You heard it, what Jesus said, my commandment is to love. So he'll call attention to life habits that are wearisome. Maybe our habits of controlling too much in our families. Maybe habits of relating too harshly, or maybe relating too emotionally detached, that he wants us engaged in the family. Maybe it's habits of serving one another, but begrudgingly. These are things he wants to cut off, right? Spring cleaning. One of the hardest ways to live with Jesus is in the middle of a conflict in the family, right? And in those moments, we're ready to defend ourselves. And those are the moments we need to listen. This is what he's saying, I want to cut out of your life, Peter. I just read a quote by our founder, A.B. Simpson, about when those moments come, stop, and learn to be still, and listen for God in those moments. This is what Simpson said. Then there is another kind of stillness, the stillness that lets God work in us and hold us to his peace, the stillness that ceases from contriving self-vindication and strategies of wisdom. Instead, the stillness lets God provide and answer the unkind word and the cruel blow in his own unfailing faithful love. How often we lose God's intervention by taking up our own cause and attempting our own defense. It's amazing when we live with him, we can drive with him. Ellen and I were recently driving, and I was sort of just, I mentioned a pastor, and I didn't put it in a good light. It wasn't very favorable, and it was like, I went, okay, Lord. I said, honey, let's pray for this pastor. Right? It just came out so quickly of my mouth. He wants to cut those things out. A second benefit, he sharpens our qualities that are useful. He builds an addition to our house. Every branch that bears fruit, he will prune so that it'll be even more fruitful. He wants to expand the living with him. I want to make this more fruitful in your life. The Menno culture is a good work of God. Pruning is a fascinating process when you study pruning. It's actually a process of cutting away overgrown stems to actually promote further health. Pruning must happen at the right time, or damage will happen or destroying the plant. Ellen gave me for Christmas a bonsai, and that bonsai has to be pruned in the right way at the right time in order for it to grow in the shape that you want it. What is the shape he's making in you by living with him, right? He's pruning you a specific way. This is what Jesus is saying. I want to make it more fruitful. But we participate in that. We participate. 2 Timothy 2:20 says, in a large house, there are articles not only of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for noble purposes and some for ignoble. If a person cleanses themselves from the latter, they will be an instrument for noble purposes, made holy, useful to the master, and prepared to do any good work. If the person cleanses themselves, be proactive in that. I see it, remove it so that I may be ready for whatever you have me to do at any time. Lord, may it be so. May it be so. Thirdly, benefit, he makes us life-giving for others. Have you ever noticed in certain houses you go into, there's an atmosphere to that place? There's a certain vibe, a connection, a wholeness, a peace, a joy. Everybody has some pieces of that. It's a culture. He said this, if you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. The fruit he's talking about here is the fruit of the Spirit. The fruit, as you know, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, and self-control. In other words, the aroma of Christ will be in our home when we participate in the remaining with him. Could it possibly be that our place, our home, can be the scent of Yankee candles in the Spirit? Right? The aroma of Christ, Paul talked about. You will have an interview with a pastor this week, and multiple. Eventually, you'll do a candidating weekend. And Ellen and I remember a candidating weekend, you know, we've had several over the years. I'll never forget this one that we had. It was a full weekend. Friday night, all day Saturday night, Sunday, all day Sunday afternoon, and then the final interview Sunday night. It was a full 3 days. And I remember the Saturday in particular, we had three groups of families that we were gonna go visit. They wanted us, and they had families there. And it was a contrast, it was a study in contrasts. The one particular family, the stories, we were laughing, getting to know each other. Eventually, later, we invited those people to do a small group together because they just were hungry and teachable. The next group, very different. Cordial, helpful, hospital, yes. But soon the conversation changed, and soon the person, couple, was talking about the youth pastor that they were struggling with and didn't like. I'm going, this feels uncomfortable. This is not about relationship. This is about you wanting to get into my ear so that you can have a say what you want. After 35 years, I could sniff it. You are not about relationship. You are about control. You need to die to self. It's a vibe. Our homes has a Menno culture. And so, this is what Jesus wants, right? Apart from me, you can do nothing. It's pretty strong. A fourth benefit, He elevates this, our love culture. I love this. As the Father has loved me, so I've loved you. Now remain in my love. They saw the loving relationship that he had with the Father. They saw it so much they said, teach us to pray like that. When they saw him, the way he loved the Father, they said, I want a relationship like that, so teach me to pray like that. So there he says, out of that, you can have this love culture in your home. I love this picture Jesus is drawing because the love of God has a purpose. We receive the love of God so we may dispense the love of God as we live with him. Someone said it well, that the pattern of Jesus was this, the way he lived. He retreated to the Father and his disciples in order to return to the people. Retreat, get filled with his love, his disciples, and then went back out. This is the pattern he lived with. Let's be honest, we live in a culture that's not very loving. It pulls things from us. On this planet, we have many unloving experiences. Your boss is cold towards you. The game has shifted. You feel left behind. Your coworker takes advantage of you. It's not a partner. Working under you and behind you. Your employees are actually cheating on you. You don't know it yet, but they are. Your kids are lying to you, and you catch them, and you don't want them. Your friends forget you. Your spouse is impatient with you. Your parents are not supportive to your walk with Christ. In these moments, we need the love of God to refuel us. And so Jesus is saying, remain. Be a meno culture with me in my love. He's inviting them to that place. Fifth benefit, he produces a joy that lasts. Music with a surround sound in the presence of God, where the music never fades. He said this, I've told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. Living with Jesus is not boring. There may be times of silence with purpose, but living with Jesus has benefits that far exceed anything this world offers. Living with Jesus produces something that cannot rust, that will never decay or diminish. Living with Jesus, because he said here that my joy may be in you, listen, for he has actually a sense of humor that will reach you. There are things he will say that will make you laugh. Listen. I remember I hadn't heard something funny in a while. And I said, Lord, am I missing something? And then the thought came to me one day at the kitchen sink while I was doing dishes. And he said, remember you asked if I have a sense of humor? I went, touche, you do. You do. Remember, the joy he said will eventually complete you. It's a fascinating statement. If you remain in me, I will have a joy with you that will complete you. There's something about the joy of God that makes us complete. I've seen this with my kids growing up when they live with me. Now they've moved on. They watch me, and they gauge how they should feel based on how I'm feeling. You are the tone setter, parents, of your home. It's amazing. Make me uncomfortable with my daughter watching me. Sometimes I'm like, give me a break. You're watching me every move, right? But Jesus is saying his joy will complete us because there's enough. Because I saw her look at me thinking, I got nothing today, honey. Right? I've got nothing. Joy in this life does not always last. It astounds me. Notice the minimal span life of some of those things. You got that raise last year? Inflation is now higher than that raise. Right? Amen. That's right. The Christmas gift you got the kids? They're all broken already. The Chiefs won the Super Bowl last year. Guess what? Someone's going to come and win it this year, right? Is Penn State going to beat Ohio State this year? I don't know. It's a joy that has a short lifespan. Jesus saying, my joy will complete you. This is what it's like living with him. See, joy in this life, and even in the church, I call it like, it's like a balloon at a porcupine party. Okay, Mary, I know you had a big wedding yesterday, so let it out. Do you understand what I'm saying? One wrong word, one comment, one gesture, boom, joy's over. That's why abiding in him is a constant joy. That expression, all good things come to an end, I detest that statement because some things will never come to an end. And if you live with him, that will never end. And so he produces a joy that lasts. Sixth, he brings us into a lifetime of friendship. These disciples must have thought, where are we going to go from here? You're leaving us. Like, what does this mean after all 3 years together? But then he says those words, my children, right? But then later he says this, I call you friends. I no longer call you servants, I call you friends. I appreciate being called Pastor Pete, but if you just want to call me Pete, I'm fine with that. Because I feel like there's something, you know, we've become friends. This is what Jesus was inviting to them. And I know that this is what we want with him, friendship with him. Once we learn that, we understand that we're friends for life. One of the things I did with my soccer boys, I coached them for 4 years, and we got to be friends. I was their teacher in the classroom. I was their coach on their field, but I wanted to be their friend for life. And so senior night was a night where they were honored as seniors, and the parents would be there, and we would introduce them. And every player I hugged, I said to them, friends for life, friends for life. And so this is what Jesus is offering them, is offering us. So here's one pitfall of not living with Jesus. Here's one pitfall that there are others, but I'm just picking one, is it's a wasted life. It's a wasted life. I don't believe anyone leaves this life from planet Earth without regrets. If you don't have regrets, I think you're either not paying attention or denying or ignoring or just you're not listening. We all do. But Jesus is making it very clear in verse 6, if you do not remain in me, that is, live with me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burned. I think you're like me. You don't like wasting things, right? Like, here's one of my pet peeves. Did you ever get upset getting lost? Why? Because you want to get to where you want to go. You're, right? You're wasting time, right? Or food in the refrigerator, your produce. On a Daniel fast, gets old real fast. I'm like, man, the peach back in the fridge has got this fuzz on it. Yeah, no more. If I see a movie I don't like, turn it off. First 5 minutes, if you don't grab me, boom. I don't want to waste. Don't want to waste my time. What are some wasteful things that are going on with you in living with Jesus? Pay attention. He's kind. Get rid of that. Get rid of that. Get rid of that. So finally, how do we live with Jesus in light of these benefits and one pitfall? Let me suggest a few things to you. First, slow down and learn to be God with God alone. Slow down and learn to be with God alone. So vital in our culture where it's so fast-paced, where production-driven is at the expense of relationship, where technology coaxes us to think that life will get easier and smoother. Ha! took me 10 minutes to get the Penn State game on yesterday because I didn't know the route, because it just, I used to go, honey, remember the days we'd go, that was it. Now I got to figure out this new system, and it's not easier. She said, chill out, honey. We'll get to the game. Slow down and learn to be with God alone. What does that look like for you? What does that look like for you? I study the life and ministry of Mother Teresa and her ministry. And one of the things I discovered in what she did as a practice, because she was the director of this. As you remember, her ministry in Calcutta, India, she was there for the poorest of the poor. And I studied their lifestyle. I studied her book. I read her books. And this is what they did in their practice. They had one day off a week, 1 week off a month, and 1 month off a year. This was their rhythm. Now, when they worked, it was long, right? Because you're dealing with poor and sick and dying at all hours of the night. But it was one day off a week, 1 week off a month, 1 month off a year. This was their rhythm. And so after that, I started to say to Ellen, we're going to take 3 weeks off, or four if we can, in these interims in the summer, so we can slow down. Because we're both very regimented, living a full life, but we want that time. So living with Jesus, slow down, learn to be with God alone. I saw that in Mother Teresa. Secondly, create a God space in your home that it's uninterruptible. It's your space in your house. Create a space. In my counseling ministry, I always ask them, do you have a place in your home that's just for you and the Lord, where you can go? It's just you two. And it depends, right? I used to get so annoyed when the kids would come to my God space, but then I realized, no, they need to see me relate and talk with Jesus. So I was, come on in, morning, how are you? You know, it was important. I had to shift my attitude, but you need your own space. Jesus said this, when you pray, go to your room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. I began to study this, like, what were the Galilean homes like that Jesus was talking about here? Well, they had this inner room. It was like a closet or pantry. It's where they kept food and supplies. So most of their life was outside, but in the home, there was really primarily two places. There was the living quarters, if you will, but then there was this large section. He's saying, go there and meet with your Father. And so this is what I'm suggesting to you, is that to live with Jesus is to have your own space with God, that the people know. Jesus did this in the Gospels, right? Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went out to a solitary place where he prayed. That phrase, solitary place, is the word eremos. It can be translated deserted place or lonely place or quiet place. Quiet. I'm an extrovert, but I know the value now of just being quiet with him. Just quiet. Jesus did this. He made this a habit. When we're quiet and we learn to listen, we'll begin to see the things that we don't need anymore. You know, the expression I use with young people is like, it's like you're looking to the world to feed your soul. That's like Free Willy trying to feed your soul with a goldfish. It's not going to get you far. So I share this with you, and I'll wrap this up. I share this descriptively, not prescriptively, okay? There's a difference. I'm just sharing how I understand what that looks like for Ellen and I, and you don't see this as you have to do it this way. It's not a one-size-fits-all. But when I'm going to say us. I'm just going to conclude you in this. When you wake up, I like to wake up to music. So I play Vienna Boys Choir. It's beautiful. It just kind of gets me focused. I make my breakfast, and I sit and have breakfast with Jesus. It's just chatting, little things, just getting warmed up. Right after that, I dive into the Psalms, because that awakens me to what David had with God, or Moses, and then the phrases. Then there's phrases that hit me, and then I will take my journal and I'll begin to write out what I hear him saying. You can keep a journal of what God is saying and doing in your life. Just keep a journal just for that, right? Or a father journal, which I've talked at soul care retreats or soul care moments that we've had. There are so many beautiful tools out there. The Puritan prayers, their depth and their honesty and their understanding of God, I can benefit from. I have my notebook right by my bed, and for the last 20 years, whenever I've gotten a dream I felt was from the Lord, Job talks about this, in a dream of the night, I write it down. And whatever God wants to say to me on that. See, Jesus doesn't want part-time roommates. He wants to invite you into the high life of the kingdom life. But it's like to live with him. To live with Jesus, it's the greatest pursuit, the greatest lifestyle we could ever have. He's inviting you. What's he saying to you today? What are you hearing? What is resonating? The benefits? I'm very grateful that when we choose to live with him, he does what he says he promised. And we get to know him more and more. I close back in 2016 when Ellen and I were doing another interim pastorate. It was a family that I lived with. And Carl and Nora were their names. They are right over here in Harrisburg. And Jody was their daughter. Jody was a wonderful young lady. I call her the Hopper. She was just always bouncing all over the house, you know. And one of the things we learned, and one of the things I learned, is that I had to learn to adapt to whatever their life was like. And I found it very interesting. They rubbed off on me, and I rubbed off on them. They rubbed off on me in multiple ways, as they were as a family, and some of the traditions they do. But I rubbed off on them. They like coffee now. They never were coffee drinkers. They'd never seen The Sound of Music before. Now they watch it as a family. Now there are things that we do in our family at Christmas time because of them. Why do I say this? When we live with Jesus, he'll rub off on us. And what are those traditions you can set up in your family that will start? I'm going to pray, and I'm going to ask the Holy Spirit to just bring further to light what he wants to do for you and in you and living with him. Okay? Okay?